So we're in this series where we've been talking about when real life meets real love, and we've been looking at the different ways that we bring our real selves to worship and to the community, the things that we face, the challenges that we have. And each week we've been looking at a different one and trying to look at how does the message of the gospel impact our real lives. And so today we're going to talk about fear, and there's a scripture I'm going to read here from Matthew chapter 14, verses 22 through 33, where it says, "Immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side. And while he dismissed the crowds, and after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. And when evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat was battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking toward them on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, saying, 'It is a ghost.' And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, 'Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid.' Peter answered him, 'Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water.' He said, 'Come.' So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, 'Lord, save me.' Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, 'You of little faith, why did you doubt?' And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And those in the boat worshiped him, saying, 'Truly, you are the Son of God.'" May God add a blessing to the reading and the hearing and the understanding of God's word for us today. So this week we're going to talk about fears. And I did a little search on the internet to try to find out what are the most common fears that people have. It came up with the five most common. So I'm going to see how many of those that we can name. Now let me just tell you, they kind of put them in general categories. And so some of the answers you could say, yep, that falls in one of those general categories. But what are some of the, what do you think are the five most common fears that people have? Spiders. You are correct. In fact, it's animals or phobias, things like fear of spiders, arachnophobia, by the way, snakes, which I had never heard this word and probably can't pronounce. It's like ophidiophobia. Fear of dogs, those are some of the common examples of fears. But of animals of different kinds, that's one of them, all right? Heights I heard over here. And that would be probably the situational fears, they said. So things like fear of flying, fear of enclosed spaces, fear of public speaking, fear of heights. So a situation like that. What else did I hear? Death? That's a good one, but it's not on here. Interesting. Public speaking, that's right. And that goes into situational fears as well. So we got three more still.
The unknown?
That's I'm not sure if that fits under one of these categories. But again, yeah, that unknown could be one of them. Now, some of you are Googling this right now. Don't cheat. Fear of being alone, yeah? I think, and that would probably fall into that situational fear again. So I'll give you the others, unless somebody wants to yell out one more.
People.
Gosh, that would be a great one too. I don't think the internet knew what it was talking about. Finances. I think that.
Situational.
Yeah, there's a lot of situational fears. You get a broad category. So the natural environment was one. Well, did somebody say heights?
Yeah.
Okay, so that seems situational, but that's actually natural environment. It said fear of heights, fear of storms, fear of the darkness. So the natural environment phobias. This one was interesting. Blood injection or injury phobias, which I thought was funny that we're having a blood drive today. But that, you know, fear of needles or fear of blood or fear of getting injured. And the last one was social phobia. A fear of social situations, and that may be public speaking, but fear of social situations or scrutiny by others, where somebody might judge you of something. So Those were the five significant fear categories that it gave. So the scripture that we read this morning, the disciples are afraid. It says right in there that they were afraid. And I'm not sure if it's fear of the natural environment because a storm has come up, or if it's more a fear of a situation, because it's not just that there's a storm, it's a fear that they are in the middle of the Sea of Galilee when the storm hits. And so their situation is they're in a boat in the middle of this, and how are they going to get back to the shore? And you know, this immediately follows the story from last week that Mitch preached on, of the feeding of the 5,000. So that's what has happened right before this. And in fact, the way that Matthew tells it, he uses the word immediately. He uses it a number of times in the scripture, but immediately Jesus tells the disciples to get into the boat and to head out onto the water, but he doesn't get in it with them. I don't know, did he know something was coming here? Or, you know, it seems like he decides he needs a little alone time, and he's the one that sends them out onto the water, and he goes up onto a mountain to pray. They never talk about, and how are we going to get back together if we're going to cross this Sea of Galilee, which is about 4 miles wide, and then we're going to somehow meet up on the other side? Maybe we ought to come back to that, but I just think it's funny. Jesus doesn't seem to check the weather app to see, you know, what might be coming or what could happen if they send them out on the sea, but he sends them out, and while they're out there, it gets dark, and it says a storm came up, and now the disciples, who would have, they would have run into storms before. I mean, it's not like they didn't know that that was a possibility or maybe even been on the water, but it says it's so bad that the waves and the wind were against them and they couldn't get back to the shore. They're kind of stuck there in the openness. And so as fishermen, they know about this. They know that storms happen, but they also know how dangerous they could be. And I think about it, you know, in Kansas, we know about storms. We've all been a part of storms or see storms, and we know to go to the basement. But have you ever been caught out in the storm? You're laughing like, oh, yeah, what do you do if you don't have a basement? Well, if you are caught in the storm and you're not at a place where you can feel safe, I remember clear back, gosh, I can't even count the number of years, Diane and I weren't married yet. We were dating, and we were helping as counselors at a middle school canoe camp. And I remember, I mean, we were somewhere around 20 years old and with these students, and it was this camp where the students, the middle schoolers, would come for a week, and they'd spend the whole week living in tents, cooking over a fire and preparing all their food and being out in the elements. And then at one point during the camp, you would get in these canoes, they'd take you up to the point on the Arkansas River. And by the way, if you call it the Arkansas River, you're obviously not from Kansas, but the Arkansas River, where we would go, and then there was about a 20-mile canoe trip that included an overnight. So you get in the water, you go downstream, you stop for the evening, you at a sandbar, you cook your food there, you sleep out under the stars. Now, we did have a way to make kind of a makeshift tent where you would take canoes and paddles and a tarp, and you could create a little shelter if you needed it. And we would stagger it because we had usually three or four campsites, and so one would leave, and then they'd get back the next day, and then the next group would go out because you only had so many canoes, and that way it kind of staggered people along. So Diana's out there, and her group goes out on the river, and that night, a storm comes up, and not just any storm. I mean, the rain and the lightning and tornadoes, and they're on a sandbar. And I remember this because this is pre-cell phones. It's not like they could call and say, you know, somebody come get us. It's not like they could look at their weather app and see where the storm is hitting. They were there on the sandbar, and we didn't know exactly where they were on the river, because we knew about a general area where you'd stop for the night, but it all depended on how much progress you made during the day. And with middle school canoers, you never know what that's going to be. And so they hit the sandbar, and there may be near a bridge or a overpass, but for the most part, they were there. And the best they could do is just hunker down on this sandbar and hope the storm would pass. And I still remember talking to Diana afterwards, because, you know, about, you know, how frightened are you? And you know, she's out there, she's 20 years old with another counselor about 20 years old, and then these 12 or so middle schoolers. And she told me while they were there, kind of huddled under their makeshift tent, that one of the middle school girls said to her, "Diana, are you scared?" And Diana looked at her and said, "No, we're going to be okay. It's going to be all right." And she said, "What I really want to say, no, I'm not scared. I'm absolutely terrified. But I can't let you know that." They're stuck in the middle of that storm. So we know about storms and what it must be like for the disciples to be stuck out there in their boat, knowing that they've lived through things like this before, but how are we going to get to shore, feeling so vulnerable? I mean, the disciples have to be feeling that same way in the middle of the Sea of Galilee, and especially because Jesus didn't come with them. Jesus stayed behind like he knew something was about to happen. And to make things worse, as they're out there in the middle of the storm, they see this figure coming towards them. And the obvious answer for what that must be is a ghost, which I thought was interesting. That wasn't on the list of our fears. I think that probably would have been in my top five. But that fear of ghosts. And so they become even more terrified, it says. And yet that ghostly figure keeps coming closer. And the disciples, it says, cry out in fear. They don't know what's happening here. And then the ghost says to them, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid," in a voice that sounds eerily like Jesus. And I think, isn't that exactly what a ghost would do if it really was a ghost? Is pretend to be Jesus. "Oh, don't worry, don't be afraid, I'm on my way." But it doesn't say that in the story. It just says that for some reason, Peter decides that he is going to test this. Now, I have always wondered, has anybody ever become less afraid because somebody said, "Oh, don't be afraid"? I mean, does that really work? I was thinking, a number of years ago, I went to visit a parishioner at their house, and as I come to the door, the front door is open, but there's kind of this glass screen door there. I don't know, can a screen door be glass, or is it a screen? But it's a glass, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. The glass door is there, and I ring the doorbell, and this Doberman comes running towards the door. I thought was going to go through the door, just barking and growling and coming at me, and I'm thinking, "Oh my goodness, what am I going to do here?" And I'm standing there, I'm pretty shaken by this, and she comes to the door, and she just opens the door up and says, "Oh, don't worry, he won't hurt you. Don't be afraid." I don't know if that really works, to just say, "Don't be afraid," and then open the door. I said, "I've seen the movie The Omen. I know what Dobermans do." But he just came out and loved me, and it was fine. But the point is that just having Jesus say, "Don't be afraid," is that really enough? And so Peter decides, "Well, let me test you on this a little bit." And he says, "All right, I'm going to check. If it's really you, Jesus, command me to come out of the boat." And Jesus just says, "Come. Go ahead, get out of the boat." And I'm thinking, again, isn't that what the ghost would have said? "Go ahead and jump in the water." But Peter does. He gets out and he starts walking until fear hits him and the reality of his situation. And he starts to sink, just like that peeled orange. And Jesus grabs him and puts him back in the boat. Now, I've heard many times this story told, and very similar to what Stacy shared, that, you know, once he took his eyes off Jesus, he sunk and he became afraid again. If we just keep our eyes focused, it'll overcome our fears. I'm not sure if that's really true. I'm not sure if our fears just disappear that easily. But I do think this, that many times we make Peter kind of, well, the one who makes the mistake in the story, he's the one that starts to sink. I used to joke that's how he got started being called the Rock, but I think that comes at a later point. But the fact that he comes out of the boat, to me, I don't see somebody who's failed. I see the only disciple that had courage, the only one who said, "I'll try that." Even though he failed, he faced his fears and he stepped out of the boat. You know, I think that's where the real love of Jesus calls us, is to face our fears and to step out sometimes. You know, when I was growing up, I loved sports. I mean, I still love sports, but I played everything that whatever season it was in. I didn't play it well, I just played it because I loved the sports. And whatever season, and I especially loved football. My problem was I wasn't very big. I was kind of a late bloomer when it came to growing, and so I was often the shortest person and the smallest person in my class growing up. And yet I loved football and I wanted to play, and I begged my parents to play tackle football, and they said, "Oh no, you're going to get hurt. We're not going to let you get hit that hard." And I said, "You know what, when I get to junior high," and we still had junior highs back then, "when I get to junior high, I'm playing tackle football. I'm going out for the football team." And that's exactly what I did. Eighth grade came, and I went out for the football team, still one of the smallest kids. In fact, here's how small I was. When I put my uniform on, I used to have to pull the jersey out of my pants so you could read the whole number. That's how small I was. They didn't have a uniform small enough for me. And so I would pull that out. So I played. I didn't play very often. I didn't get in the games very often. Every once in a while, we'd get ahead and they'd throw some of us in. But for the most part, I stood on the sideline, but I was part of the team. So the next year, I was getting ready to go into ninth grade at the high school, and I wasn't sure whether I wanted to do that again. I still loved football. I loved being a part of the team, but, you know, being that small, it just was hard. And I remember I was at a baseball game, because I played every sport. I was at a baseball game, and I was sitting on the bench next to Eric. Eric was like the opposite of me. Eric was big and strong and athletic and just a little bit mean. I mean, he had a mentality of a linebacker. He liked to hit people. He liked to play football. And he was a star. Everybody knew Eric. He was very popular and very, very athletic and played football. And for some reason, he intimidated me a lot. But we were sitting on the bench next to us, I think while we were both on the bench while people were out there in the field that inning. And we just started talking, which shocked me a little bit because I thought, "You're talking to me?" And he said, "You know, football's coming up. You going to play football again this year?" And that's when my fear hit me, because I thought, I'm small, and if I say, "Yeah, I want to play football," he's going to laugh at me. He's going to point out how small I am, and why would I want to go play football when I'm just going to be on the sideline, and I'd probably get hurt. And all these fears started welling up. So you know what I said to him? I said, "Well, I haven't decided, but I don't think so." And he looked at me, and he said, "Don't you like football?" I said, "Oh, I love football, but you know, I'll just stand on the sideline, and I'm not going to play." And he said, "If you love football, why would you not go out for the team?" And it shocked me. And he doesn't know this, but it was his voice that convinced me to step into my fears, to step out of the boat, to do something that I thought, I might fail at this, but that's what I want to do. That's what I love to do, even if I'm just on the sideline. Now, I'd love to tell you that the story ends that I grew and I became a football star, which isn't true. But I did play 4 years of high school football because of that conversation with Eric, because I chose to step into my fear. And eventually I did grow a little bit and got to play some, but I absolutely loved it. I would not trade that for anything. Sometimes we need that voice to just help us step out of the boat and to face whatever it is we're afraid of. And we all have things that we're afraid of. And sometimes stepping out of the boat helps us to live into the purpose that God has for us, that this adventure of life. I mean, football is something I enjoy, but sometimes God calls us to do things that cause us some fear. First church I served out of seminary was in Wichita. I was on staff as one of the associates. There were three pastors on staff. This was 20-some years ago now. And as I was there in Wichita, it was the same time that Kansas was considering what they called the marriage amendment. Anybody remember that? There were two pastors in Wichita, of very large churches, that were concerned that we might start allowing gay people to get married. And so they started this whole campaign that the Kansas Constitution needed an amendment to keep that from happening. And it was interesting, these two pastors, they acted like they were fighting what they thought was the good cause, but it seemed like every time they advertised something, their pictures were great big on it, that they loved the publicity as well. And I remember in the church that I served, I was a new pastor, it was kind of a moderate church, and I remember talking to a few people that I knew were safe, and they would ask me, what do you think of this marriage amendment? I said, I'm just not in favor of it. He said, really? I thought all the pastors were in favor of it. I said, no. And I had a number of reasons why. And these were usually safe people I could talk to at the time. And I just said, you know, I just think it's hurtful. It's already the law. All this does is tell a group of people, you're not as valuable as anybody else. You don't have the same rights as everybody else. You can't love the people you love, that you are less than. And it's not going to change anything because it doesn't change the law, and it probably won't stand if the law of the land changed, which I was right about. And it's I just think it's hurtful. And so one day I was in my office, and I got an email from one of the people I had talked to. And they said, it started off by saying, I know it's probably too late, but... And so I read, it said, this afternoon there is a group of pastors who are against the marriage amendment, and they're going to have a press conference to say that not all the pastors in this city are supportive of this. And I know how you feel, and I just thought it's maybe too late and you're too busy, but if you have time, you might want to go and be part of that group. And I still remember that fear come up again, and I thought, and I started writing back, and I said, you know, I could probably make it work, but I'm not sure if it makes any difference or not. This is going to pass in Kansas. Sometimes you have to decide what battles you're going to fight and what toll it might take and what it's worth. And I know Jesus never actually stood for anything unpopular. And then I thought, where did that come from? And I realized that, and I went and I deleted the entire email, and I just wrote back, I'll be there. And so I went, and there was a group of maybe 15 pastors in all of Wichita, Kansas, that were saying, we don't support the marriage amendment. And all the press from the different TV stations were there, people I saw mainly on TV, and they had one person who was the spokesperson, and they asked the rest of us just to kind of stand behind them in a group so it looked like there were a lot of us. And we stood, and if this were the middle, and Matthew, I know I'm going to step out of the screen here, but they were at the middle at that table, and I was kind of like right here on the end. And I thought, well, I haven't told my senior pastor what I'm doing, and I haven't told the church what I'm doing. I'm not sure if I even told Diana what I was doing, but here I am on the end. I thought, maybe I won't be on camera, and I won't have to worry about this. And then for some reason, the person next to me just kind of moved over a little bit, and I said, oh, okay, so I moved in. And then they moved again, and I thought, what's going on here? So I moved in, and they kept moving, and for some reason, it was just about time to go on camera, and just as they were ready to say, all right, here we go, here I was, standing right behind the speaker, which was going to be on all three news stations that night. And I just decided, well, I guess here I stand. Jesus called me to step out of the boat. And I wondered, what was going to be the response that Sunday? Not only was I afraid now that I was on camera, I knew that next Sunday I was going to have to go back and face people who might disagree with me. And so I did go back and tell the senior pastor, by the way, I did something today. And he was very kind and supportive. But that Sunday in church, I just waited for people to come up and say something. And you know what? They did. And every one of them said, thank you. We were so proud to have you as our pastor. And I just thought, sometimes when we step out of the boat, when we face our fears, the fears that we thought were going to happen never really do. But that it starts us on this adventure and this journey. And I tell you what, that experience gave me the courage to be able to stand up and speak for justice in my ministry, to speak for what I thought was right, even if it was unpopular, and to say our job is to not hurt people and to do what we think is right. You know, stepping out and facing our fears can make all the difference in how we live and how we find real life. There's going to be some questions that go up on the screen for you to reflect on, but I would suspect that every one of us has something that we fear right now that is holding us back. And how is it that we can live that and step out of the boat when we need to do that? I invite you to take a few moments to reflect.